good morning, everyone, and welcome to Out and About with Elaine. And in studio right now, I have Jim Jones running my board, so I really appreciate you getting up this early with me today. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Sorry.
Just, that's okay.
Just getting stuff ready on the board.
I know. This is great. We have a very fun fact-filled show at the end of the show. At the beginning of the show, we're a little bit serious now because I have Executive Director Eric Creamer, who is the our local Mothers Against Drunk Driving Executive Director, and he's on to talk about the different changes, the statistics on drunk driving. It seems like there's more and more people that are hitting the newspapers. Recently in Plainville, we had an actual a motorcycle and a automobile incident where the motorcyclist was hit by this car. But what makes me very angry is this person was driving out of a pub, and it was his third offense. His third offense, folks, and he only got a $5,000 bail. And now he'll be back in court in October to face motor vehicle homicide. But three times, really? Shouldn't it just be once? Shouldn't it be none? No time? Shouldn't we not be drinking and driving? I mean, the norms have changed. Back in the day, it was socially acceptable to be drinking. I get that. But now with so much social media and attention and so many fatalities and children are drinking and driving and adults are too, it's like something's got to give. So I wanted to have Eric on to explain to us about his organization and what's been happening and what the trends really are. So I really appreciate you getting up this early, Eric, and being on my show this morning. So can you give us a little bit of facts about MAD and what you do there?
Absolutely. Mothers Against Drunk Driving was founded in 1980, and that was at the national level. And it was founded by a grieving mother whose daughter was killed by a drunk driver in Southern California. And she wanted to make a change, and because enough was enough. Things needed to change culturally and legislatively, and she was able to found the first MAD chapter in California, and it first came to Rhode Island in 1983. Very similarly, it was founded by a grieving mother whose daughter was killed by a drunk driver when she was her daughter was walking to a church carnival, and it was a multiple DUI offender who had killed her daughter, and the founder is Denise Allard. She had found her daughter was killed in 1982, and she founded the MAD chapter here in Rhode Island in 1983. She has since passed on, but Denise's legacy is certainly felt every single day. I'm the third executive director for MAD Rhode Island. The first was David Russell, who was actually a radio personality in Woonsocket. Right after him was Gabrielle Abadi, who is now the Chief of Highway Safety for the state DOT in Rhode Island.
Wow.
So, and at its core, MAD is a victim service organization. I think that many people, when they think about the organization, the first thing that they think of is what you see publicly, such as the legislative advocacy work that we do. The PSAs that people probably remember from the 1980s and 1990s that were really prominent throughout our society. But that's just some of the work that we do. Obviously, that's the public face of MAD, and we still do all of that work, which is just as important. Really at our core, we provide resources and services for victims of drunk driving. Many of these individuals have never thought about what would it be like to be the victim of drunk driving or any crime for that matter. And they're thrust into this world they did not ask for. And they have a lot of questions and there's concerns there, whether it's somebody who has been injured by a drunk driver, somebody who has a loved one who has been killed, or an individual who has just been hit. There are no injuries or anything more major, but there's a lot that comes up, whether it's insurance questions, financial questions, they need help. They have advocates within the Attorney General's office that certainly help them, but MAD also is obviously very specific in what we provide for individuals, whether it's help with writing a victim impact statement during a court case, providing individuals that could help out with pro bono work, whether it's legally or financially as an advisor, And somebody who just maybe somebody who's been through it before themselves, who can provide that type of partnership, friendship, and just to you know, be somebody that they can talk to.
Right. Now, in Rhode Island, do you also cover like parts of Massachusetts as well, or is there a separate chapter for Massachusetts?
There is a chapter in Massachusetts. They're headquartered out of Burlington, mm-hmm. But there is quite a bit of overlap in a lot of our resources because obviously there are communities that might want to meet with somebody locally closer to where they live, whether it's the South Coast or the Greater Fall River area. There are individuals that have come to our Providence office for assistance because it was easier for them to work with somebody. And obviously, we're a huge team as a MAD family. We'll help out anybody regardless of where they live. And it's, I know it's the same over in the Mass area. If there's somebody that you know, may live in Rhode Island or Connecticut and they want to go up to the Springfield area, say, they're certainly welcome to do that.
Right. Now, how have you noticed a change, a shift? Are there more increased incidences of drunk driving or less, in your opinion?
So that's a twofold question. The latest numbers that we're able to provide from the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration is from the year 2014, because they usually will release information every year, every other year. And the numbers that we've seen we've seen decreased fatalities, and we've seen DUIs decrease in regards to the amount of incidents. However, when looking at the numbers a little bit more closely, we still see that out of all traffic fatalities, those that are drunk driving related are still about one-third of all of them. So what that means to us is that even though there's less DUI-related fatalities, the rate is still just as much. And actually, Rhode Island increased to 35% with the last percentages. Before, it was 33, and then the last figures that we were able to have, went up to 35% of all traffic fatalities were DUI-related, which to us is obviously very concerning.
Yes.
We do see that there are less traffic fatalities in general, but that speaks volumes a lot about what law enforcement has been able to do, obviously, in being able to get offenders off of our roads, educators, and being able to provide prevention education to young people and to the public as well. And I think how we've obviously come a very long way since MAD started in 1980, where there's been this cultural shift where, as you mentioned, you alluded before, drunk driving wasn't considered a major crime. That it obviously we all know that it is, and I think that the majority of individuals now feel that way. Mm-hmm. When maybe it was very different 30 to 40 years ago, but we still have a long way to go because it's in many circles around this nation, including in Rhode Island. Obviously, they view it as acceptable. People will still take that risk, even though there are so many resources available to them.
Right. I have a question too. You said that in Rhode Island, the numbers went up for 2%. What do you attribute to that increase?
I think it's individuals where it could be something where it's hard to say, but I think maybe the mindset of the individuals that need their car to be able to get from point A to point B, they won't relinquish that control over having that vehicle that they're at their disposal. They might, even though they have options such as Uber and other ride-sharing services, and the obvious one, which is designating a sober driver, sometimes individuals have a really difficult time just relinquishing that control of their vehicle, and they're worried about it, and or they're just not thinking at all. And
right.
I think that's the biggest issue amongst the population of why drunk driving continues, mm-hmm. is that educational piece where when you're impaired, you're not thinking straight either. When somebody simply very easily could have planned ahead if they knew they were going to be out somewhere and drinking.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's true. I know that can I ask you, I don't know, I don't want to put you on the spot per se, but I think you have the statistics behind you. Are there more teenage fatalities more so than adults, or what are you seeing there?
No, that's a really, really interesting and good question. A lot of people might assume that young people are the ones that are most at risk or at fault. But believe it or not, the majority of DUI cases, and including fatalities that we see, tend to be individuals that are adults. Mm-hmm. And they're usually within a particular age bracket, which is a broad one, but it's usually that group that's between roughly 20 to 21 years old and 50 years old. I know that's a pretty broad group, but they make the vast majority of them, which, by the way, is actually the same number no matter what generation. If you looked back 10 years ago, maybe even 20 years ago, it would have been the same age bracket that was most. So it's a lot of it, obviously, is that age group where they're now out of they're free out of college or maybe out of high school. They're able to have their own jobs, their own vehicles, their own work, and that freedom allows them to be able to make new choices when before they weren't able to do that as much. And obviously, you know, as you get older, obviously you get wiser, and they're the same risks you might have taken when you were 20 years old, you're not going to take when you're 40, 50, or 60 years old.
Right, that's very true. Now, are you, your organization does work with legislators and trying to enforce stronger laws on drunk driving in Rhode Island?
Absolutely. That is one of the key cogs of what we do day in and day out.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the laws that were impacted by your organization? What were some of the things that you were able to accomplish?
Probably the most high-profile one historically was in 1984 to start, and that was only a couple of years into our existence, was the 21 and over law, which was passed by President Reagan. And if many people might remember MAD back in the early 80s, Nancy Reagan was a really big advocate for a lot of public safety measures. And when Reagan was signing the bill back in 1984 to create the 21 and over law for legal drinking age, Nancy was standing next to him, which is obviously not that common when you're talking about when a president of the United States is signing a bill, the first lady is not always standing next to him, but this was obviously very close and dear to her heart. Another really big piece of legislation was in 2000, which was the .08 law, which kind of really locked in what the legal blood alcohol level was that caused impairment in somebody when they've been drinking. And that bill was passed federally, and then every state was able to ratify it, so it became law. And every state now has .08 blood alcohol level. Those are the really big two that historically MAD really advocated for many, many years, and were able to successfully accomplish that.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, ignition interlocks in vehicles are a really big piece of what we do today since the year 2000. And we've come a long way, where a lot of individuals, the legislative side, really weren't sure if interlocks would work. But once one state passed a law that required ignition interlocks for DUI offenders, they saw how it was very effective in reducing the amount of individuals who were reoffending.
Right.
The first state to do it was Arizona, and they've seen a significant and major decrease in their repeat offenses. And Rhode Island does have a ignition interlock law in place, slightly different than some of the other states that we have locally. But currently with interlocks, they are legally required for individuals that once they've gone through the adjudication process, if they are a multiple offender or have a blood alcohol level that is double the legal limit,
they would
be required to have an interlock.
Right, perfect. I'm going to stop you right there. We do have to take a quick break, but I want you to go more into the technology in that. You're listening to Out and About with Elaine, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Children and their families are invited to the Big Fiesta on October 1st from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. at the Pawtucket Public Library. The Big Fiesta celebrates Hispanic Heritage Month. This year's fiesta will feature bilingual stories with special guest bilingual storyteller Josefina Calendar. The fiesta will also include crafts, free books, and snacks. This is a free program for children of all ages and their families. For more information, please call 401-725-3714, extension 209, or email ejeffers@pawtucketlibrary.org. Looking for more opportunity? Want to improve your skills? Need a better job? The Literacy Center can help. We have year-round classes for adults in English, computer literacy, and high school equivalency. With the help of teachers and tutors, you can pass your citizenship test, make a resume, or learn how to speak and write better English. Classes held during the day, evening, or on Saturdays. Join the great group of people at the Literacy Center. We serve 500 people a year who want to make a better life. Check out our website, www.theliteracycenter.com, for tutor, training, or class schedules. Don't put it off. We are here to help. The Literacy Center, 80 North Main Street, Attleboro, 508-226-3603. A place to learn, volunteer, and grow.
The Larson Senior Center in Attleboro will host a pneumonia vaccination clinic on Wednesday, September 28th at 9 o'clock a.m. The pneumonia vaccine can protect you from pneumococcal disease. The bacteria responsible for this disease can infect the lungs, causing pneumonia. These bacteria can also invade the bloodstream, and if they reach the brain, can cause meningitis. Getting the pneumonia vaccine is recommended for everyone age 65 and older and people who are at higher risk for the disease. Register for your vaccine today by calling the Senior Center at 774-203-1900.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Out and About with Elaine. Good morning. Have that second cup of coffee. On the line here, we've been talking to Eric Creamer, who is the executive director of MAD from Rhode Island chapter. Sorry I had to cut you off there, but we are time limited here, and you've given us such great information. I wanted to talk a little bit about that interlocking technology. Can you explain it just a little bit, how it works?
Absolutely. So it's about the size of an iPhone, and it's attached to the car starter, and it has a tube that runs towards the driver once they get into the vehicle. So before they start the car, the person who has the interlock will have to blow into the device in a particular fashion, and it will then register using their breath what their blood alcohol level is. If it's above the legal limit, or it's set at something even lower, if there's any sort of alcohol in their system, the car will not start at all.
Perfect. That's great.
And once they do, and interestingly, as a fail-safe, once they are able to successfully start the vehicle, they will then, after a certain period of time, will have to blow into it again. So that'll alleviate some of the concerns about somebody cheating.
Right.
Where if there's somebody that has a buddy of theirs that might want to blow into it so they can just get in a car and go home, once they've been in the vehicle for a couple of minutes, they have to do it again, or the car will actually stop.
Wow, that's amazing. That is really great. Oh, my God. And one more thing I wanted to say, the alcohol levels, what was the legal limit, I should say, for alcohol? I could never understand the 0.8, is it?
It is 0.08. The
0.08. Sorry, it's too
early. Mm-hmm. That's definitely not anything that I'm really educated on about how they arrived at certain numbers and what they translate to.
Oh, that's my next question, but that's okay.
what the 0.08 actually refers to, but it's the legal limit is 0.08, and actually currently in Rhode Island, a law was passed in this year to expand the use of interlocks to any individuals that are applying for a hardship license that have been adjudicated as a DUI offender.
Mm-hmm.
And that hardship license is going to be allowed for people that might want to need their vehicle for work or things of that nature. But that interlock applies to any offender. So it expands the amount of individuals that will be required to have an interlock, which is obviously a good thing in MAD's standpoint.
That's really great. So tell me, do you also work closely with the police departments in Rhode Island, like educating them, or do you have a partnership, I should say, with them as far as like trying to push your message of I can't imagine, the task, the awesome task that you must have and the responsibility, because you're actually trying to protect every resident, every child, every adult in Rhode Island against drunk drivers. And it's got to be an awesome task to accomplish that. Can you give us some key things as to what you actually are able to do?
Absolutely. Referring back to the law enforcement officials, they are some of our biggest partners that we have. because it, obviously when you're talking about if somebody is being pulled over and it's really they're on the front, law enforcement officials on the front lines of being able to determine if somebody's impaired or not. And what they can do can certainly make or break a legal case to help the prosecution be able to determine whether or not this person was certainly impaired or not. So we support everything that law enforcement does in all of their service. And we actually just recognized many law enforcement officials today with a recognition breakfast, and it honored so many individuals that nobody ever hears about their names, and they're not recognized enough, but it's because of them that many of us have been protected from individuals that were on our roadways who made a really bad decision. And it makes a huge difference. And having them as some of our partners when we advocate for legislation or if we're out in the public eye making statements about being safe on our roadways, sure, law enforcement officials are hand-in-hand with us.
That's really great. I know that they have gotten some federal funding. I had read in the newspapers, and I know Massachusetts, I live in Attleboro, and so anytime that there's a major holiday, it seems like you'll see, you know, state police working with local police and trying to get, you know, random testing if people are driving erratically. You know, I am a proponent of that. I was coming back from Newport the other day, and somebody in front of me was, like, weaving left and right, left and right, left and right. And I did call 911. I was able to get a plate, even though they said to me, stay back, don't get the plate, you know, because they could do something or whatever quickly. But I was just so angry that they were out there, you know, and doing that sort of thing. It just isn't cool, as they say, anymore. But going forward, like, what is the future of your organization? What is your mission of continuing this great work that you're doing? And I admire you so much for what you are doing and working with, in collaboration, legislators and also the local police and the community. What has been your biggest challenge, shall I say?
Sure, absolutely. One of the big items that we're really starting to tackle is the issue of drugged driving. We actually just included it into our mission statement in 2015. We're really at that infant stages and being able to look at how we might be able to combat that, because when you're talking about impairment levels, it's very, very different when you're talking about any sort of particular illicit drug as opposed to alcohol. And it took many, many years to be able to get the science down and then prove it out in the public eye to take legislative and legal steps to be able to make an impairment level like the 0.08 blood alcohol level. Where obviously research is getting much closer on the drug side, but again, we're really at that very beginning stage, but it's something that Mothers Against Drunk Driving is really getting focused on. I know that many law enforcement officials and legislative officials are very concerned about the issues surrounding illegal drugs and even legal drugs in many cases, mm-hmm. That affect the way that people are able to operate a motor vehicle. It's something that I definitely think that both in the short term and the long term, MAD is definitely going to be addressing. It's obviously has been part of what we do on a day-to-day basis in our concerns, because in Rhode Island, drugs currently are part of the DUI statute. But it's just looking at other ways of being able to look at what impairment levels might be, so that it could be regulated just like alcohol is.
Right. I understand. I mean, like, remember back in the day, the DARE programs were very popular, and it really was. And I worked for 9 years with all the police officers from like Wrentham and Plainville, North Attleboro, Seekonk, and it just it was just such a push about tobacco and. Other drugs weren't really mentioned as much, and alcohol really wasn't mentioned. And it's good that, I mean, maybe they need to look at that curriculum and bring it up to speed or something. I don't know. But I remember going into schools, and there was a big push about drug awareness, you know, and the kids taking pledges and everything, which was really awesome. And the kids were committed and everything. And now you're seeing that there's just so much. You know, the kids go out in the park or they go into the woods and they start drinking and everything. And it's just really, I don't know. Something has to happen, that's for sure. Because adults just don't start drinking at 21. You know that, right?
It's true. It's true. There's a lot of education people need to be provided on. I think that's another big challenge, and I'm really happy you brought it up, because I think that a lot of young people are not educated enough about how alcohol, just talking about alcohol now, mm-hmm. how that affects the human body, or right. how that affects the brain, and all the other repercussions of people abusing a legal substance like alcohol when they're over 21 still. And I think the more information that a young person has to help them make the right choices, the better. Because if they understand how alcohol affects them, they'll be able to make the proper choice. They could break the law and drink under 21. Even when they are 21 and they're now able to drink, how can you drink it appropriately right. and legally, where it's not going to harm yourself or anybody else?
Right. No, I agree. I only got a few more minutes, and I wanted to get in some positive things because I am a positive person. You have a fundraising event coming up on October 30th called Dancing with the Rhode Island Stars. Can you give us some information about that?
Absolutely. That is a first-time event that we're having. We haven't done in the past. And we're bringing six celebrity stars, if you will, Rhode Islanders, of course.
Sure.
And they're going to be, just like in the show, they're going to be competing against each other, not at the same scale as the show, obviously, but they're going to be performing two dances.
Mm-hmm.
They've been paired with a professional partner from the Arthur Murray Dance Studio.
Oh, great.
And they'll be doing about 12 practices prior to the event, and it'll be a great night. It's fun. It's a charity event. It's going to be the entire community can come. I can certainly share with you the celebrity stars, if you will.
Yeah, I'd love to know who you have.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have Richmond Police Chief Elwood Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be donning his dancing shoes that night. And we also have former State Representative Vincent Mesolella, who is now the director of the Narragansett Bay Commission. And we also have Matt Ceccarella, who is he's involved with the South Kingstown School Department. We also have Kathy Andreozzi, who is a board member of MAD in Rhode Island.
Uh-huh.
And she is also the director of the Tori Lynn Andreozzi Foundation.
Oh, yes.
We also have Lynn Hall, who runs Boulder Dash,
mm-hmm.
Which is an obstacle course program. And lastly, we have Ann Mulhall, who is the director of LDI Casting.
That's a
movie casting company.
Yes, yes. And how much are the tickets?
It's $50 to attend.
Okay.
And that includes food, some drinks, the show, and
mm-hmm.
there's also going to be a silent auction there as well. We're going to have some really great items available for auction.
Great. Oh, my God. It sounds like fun. Now, how do they get these tickets, and can you give your contact information?
Absolutely. They can go right onto our website, which is www.mad.org.
Mm-hmm.
They could click on locations and then on Rhode Island, and under the events section, they'll see the Dancing with the Stars.
Mm-hmm.
They can purchase the tickets right online. And if there's any other information that they would like, they can certainly contact me. They can email me at eric.creamer@mad.org, or they could certainly call our phone number, which is 401-421-0800.
Perfect. And I have one last question with 30 seconds to go. What's the best part of your job?
The best part of my job is seeing how the victims are impacted in a positive way,
mm-hmm.
being able to help them in any sort of fashion. There are so many things that a victim of drunk driving has to go through. If there's one thing that we can do to help them through this, it makes everything worth it. It's the best part of my job. It's probably the most difficult, but really making a difference in their lives is really what drives me every day.
Wow, well said. Listen, I can't thank you enough for getting up so early in the morning and coming on our show today. I want to wish you the best, and I'll give the information about Dancing with the Stars later in the program, but thank you so very much, Eric. You have a great day.
You as well.
Thanks. Good night. All right, so listen, you're out and about with Elaine, and we've got to take a quick break, and on the flip side, we have Greg Abate, who's jazz, and you know how I love jazz. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Metamorphosis, The Art of Altered Books, will be exhibited from July 30th to November 6th at the Fuller Craft Museum in Brockton. The exhibit will feature mixed media artists who carve, gouge, fold, collage, and manipulate books to transform the printed pages into a sculptural object. A partial list of exhibiting artists includes Longbin Chen, Andy Hayes, Wendy Wall, and Jacqueline Rush Lee. For more information, call the museum at 508-588-6000. Does your back hurt after a long night's sleep? Has your mattress seen better days? Is your current bedroom furniture a mixture of different furniture sets? The Bedding Center, located on Pleasant Street and proud sponsor of this radio station and high school sports, offers a wide array of mattresses along with beds, bedroom furniture, and odd-sized mattresses and box springs. You can reach them online at bedding-center.com or by phone at 508-226-8090. Popular historian and speaker Dr. Gary Highlander will be back this December at Richards Memorial Library in North Attleboro for a three-part series on John Marshall and the Supreme Court. The series will take place on three consecutive Thursdays, December 1st, 8th, and 15th at 7 o'clock p.m. Justice John Marshall was the longest-serving Chief Justice and a member of the court for over 30 years. Many of his decisions are still having an effect today. Dr. Highlander's talks are popular and fill up fast, so register early. To register, email mholmes@salesinc.org.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Out and About with Elaine. I'm Elaine LaRoche, and we are on WARA 1320. Good morning, good morning. We have on the line one of my favorite jazz musicians, Greg Abate. So, Greg, good morning. How are you today?
Oh, I'm good. I'm just waking up.
Oh, listen, I appreciate you calling so early in the morning, my friend, but tell us something good. You are a performer. You have been performing. I've been watching you on Facebook. You've been all over this country, in England and in the Midwest and everywhere in between, but you are local. You are local today on Saturday. Where are you going to be?
Tomorrow. Well, tonight, actually.
Oh,
tonight.
Yes.
I'll be at the... Sunday, or you, this is Saturday, that's right. Tonight,
yes.
Tonight is Chan's in Woonsocket with my quartet. I hope people can come out. It's a great, great night of, a great vibe at Chan's. As you know, Elaine, and it's a nice early concert at 8 o'clock, you know. So the number there is like 401-765-1900.
That's right. I got that right here. That's great. And you're doing a special tribute to Phil Woods. Can you explain who he is and why you are having a tribute to him? Because you were very close to him, correct?
Well, yeah. In the last 4 or 5 years, we became very close as colleagues. And, you know, he was a mentor of mine. And he's one of the greatest alto saxophonists, in the world. And he was one of the original real, bebop players that came up from late 20s onward. So, he's a legend, as a lot of us saxophonists feel about him. And he's on my newest recording. In fact, we recorded that live at Chance in 2014. It was released in 2015. It's a double CD. And I also recorded together with Phil in 2012. First time we played together was in the studio there.
Wow.
In Pennsylvania. But he's, people may or may not know a lot of these jazz players, but if you do know Phil, then you know who I'm talking about. If not, you can look him up. Phil Woods, as it's spelled, W-O-O-D-S.
Right. So it must have been, you said that he was one of your mentors, so I was wondering, that must have been a thrill to be able to record with him.
It was. It was like we're all humans, right? But, you have this stigma about someone, especially someone that plays the instrument that you aspire to play well, and they do. And so you learn from them through the years of just listening, and, of course, to a lot of musicians, but then actually meeting the person and working side by side and feeling like an equal, that they treat you like an equal and very supportive. It's like... when Charlie Parker told Phil that he liked his playing, you know, and so that Phil was just a young guy then, in his 20s, and he met Charlie Parker, and that was a big vote of confidence coming from Charlie Parker, you know. So Phil sort of did that for me at an older age, but you know, it never hurts to get constructive criticism or you know, kind of like a praise from someone that you admire, you know. I try to do that with students that I have, that, you know, I try to give them constructive criticism, praise, without being overly flowery, because they have to develop still. But without constructive criticism in life, you know, you can hurt somebody that's trying to do something good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it gets to that other area of teaching, you know.
Right, and we should tell folks that you are a teacher and at Rhode Island College, and tell them what you teach.
Well, I'm a jazz adjunct, a professor of jazz studies, been there for 16 years, and basically it's a two-day, day thing, and I teach jazz composition, improvisation theory, and I conduct jazz groups, like small combos, four or five pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got some bigger ones this semester. And I've got a jazz theory course that I've been in an independent study with another person for improvisation. And then I have five separate private students, like one vibes player and one flute player, two alto players, and another a trombone player. They're all studying jazz improvisation with me. So it's a pretty busy semester, and I've got like October tour coming up to Ohio in a couple of weeks, and then I go to England again in November for 2.5 weeks, and then New Mexico in December, and then January somewhere, and then I'm going to Poland in March to teach at Academy of Krakow for a week, and then I'm going back to Ohio and then England.
That's awesome. I have a question. Of all the kinds of jazz, smooth jazz, contemporary, bebop, and others, what made you decide to go into the bebop, and if you can describe that type of kind of playing?
Well, I like the intricacy of it, and it's like, I just like, sort of like, I feel, actually, not sort of, I feel that it chose me, so it's possessed my soul, you know, it's like this thing that I have, and I just like the way that the chord changes lie, and the freedom of speech you have as a jazz player, and that as long as you have ample technique to carry out the ideas that it takes to play this music. So I'm glad as an early age that I worked on classical training to develop technique to be able to play the fast lines and things I hear. Because if you don't practice, you know, I can't imagine all the hours I put in.
Mm.
I mean, you know, doing this, but it was a work of love, I guess. So you don't really like feel the pain of the time, you know.
Right.
I mean, like if I go to the gym, which I should do more, I really feel like, oh man, when's this gonna end? You know, I mean, I gotta get out of here. But when I was practicing, I used to go by fast. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you're destined to do it. And how long have you been a jazz musician?
Oh, geez. Since like, well, 73, I joined the Ray Charles Band. That was like, I was in it with Ray Charles for 2 years. And then before that, I played different things. I was actually playing Motown music in Los Angeles and Vegas, playing, you know, Wilson Pickett, James Brown, and, you know, Sly and the Family Stones bands, and then I played in fusion bands, which were more of a funk jazz thing, and then I was Ray Charles band, so
mm-hmm.
Really stopped playing jazz until I left the Artie Shaw Band in 87, where I played more of as a soloist, and I was playing, that's when I started to get into the bebop tradition, after I left the Artie Shaw Band with Artie there, and he wasn't playing, but he was there as he owned the band, but Mr. Dick Johnson was the holder of the clarinet book of Artie Shaw. So that was an experience. All these things are schools, you know, I call them schools. So it's like, in the classroom, you learn theory and paper and stuff, and you do it. You might play a little bit. But to really learn, like if you go 4 years to college for music, that's like going to kindergarten. The real school is when you get out and play with these different schools, like the College of Ray Charles is mine, the College of Artie Shaw, the College of Phil Woods, College of, you know, all these different great players I played with. Everything builds up strength in your playing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Because I've seen you in concert many times, and it seems that you're surprised every time that you go on stage. I mean, like the melodies and the music is similar, but you do a lot of like improv, don't you? Like improv, and the band behind you just like follows your lead. It's like a roller coaster, a thrilling ride. That's how I would describe your concerts.
Oh, thank you. It's really nice. I play with great players, so it's all intuitive, you know. It's like really, yeah, to have that. I'm really, really blessed to have that in my life, you know.
Right. So, So your band's been with you for how long?
Well, I've got different bands, you know, actually, Elaine, because this day and age, a lot of musicians are more self-sufficient, where they can get different jobs with different leaders like myself, or do a general business gig. Like, you know, one group cannot support many artists, because to get different types of work in this day and age, unless you have like a tour that's saying, well, we've got four months on the road or something, then you would put a group together and you would go do the tour, and then you would come back and people would go back to their teaching, or, well, I've got this gig tonight with the Pops. You know, some people play great piano, they work with me, but they play with the Boston Pops too. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I hire them, and then they say, gee, I got to cancel out, I got the Pops and I can't get out of it, so I get another piano player to play, you know, or something like that. So it's not, you cannot not always have the same band. Like Tuesday night I'm playing at Sahara Club in Methuen, and I have the band that's with me on the album with Phil Woods, and the bass player can't make it, but the piano player and the drummer can do it. Mm-hmm. So I've got another bass player going to be doing it.
Wow.
And I know that guy.
So, right. So who is going to be playing with you on Saturday at Chance, tonight at Chance?
Well, I've got Gary Johnson. Great player.
Oh, yeah. I've seen him. Yeah, he's very good.
And then I've got Todd Baker on bass.
Mm-hmm.
And Kent Hewitt on piano.
Wow.
Very, very special.
Yeah. So expecting a sellout crowd as always, you do. And such a great crowd of folks. You know, it's just such a great pleasure to see you on stage with all your musicians, and they just follow your lead, as they say. And I was there when you had a birthday with John. Remember the last time I was up there, you had a special.
Wow, is it that long? Long ago?
Yeah, it was.
It wasn't last May. It was the May before that.
No, it was recently. Remember when you guys were celebrating a birthday together? Weren't you or an anniversary? I can't remember.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
What the heck was that?
Yeah, I think you both had a birthday or something. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, we had the same birthday.
Yeah, it was that, because you guys were playing. It was this year. Yeah, a few months back.
Wasn't the Music Hall of Fame thing?
It wasn't, because I couldn't make it that day, but I think it was either the night or something. It was something funky like that. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah. But it was great to see you on stage many times, and I look forward to it. Unfortunately, I can't make it tonight, but I will catch you again, because you do play locally in Providence, I know. And of course, our mutual love of Kerry will let me know when you are playing next and everything. So you're going to be playing tonight at Chance, and a really great concert to remember Phil Woods. That's really great. I wish you all the best, and I really appreciate you coming in and you know, talking to us. I know it's early in the morning, but I will catch your next concert for sure. So thanks for calling in, Greg.
Oh, thanks a lot, Elaine. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Take care, and you have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. All right. That is Greg Abate. Wow. If you're looking for something really great to do, go to Chance tonight, because you are going to see one of America's best jazz musicians ever. You're listening to Out and About with Elaine. It's Saturday morning. Good morning, and we will be right back after these messages.
St-
Stop by the Norton Public Library on October 6th at 6:30 p.m. for a personalized virtual tour of the cemeteries of Norton. Brenda Sullivan will present a 90-minute lecture on cemetery art, history, and symbolism in a virtual tour called Welcome to the Graveyard. The tour will take attendees from colonial burial grounds into 21st century locations, examining the evolution of cemeteries and gravestones. Brenda's presentation will display photographs of all of Norton's historic cemeteries. Call the library at 508-285-0265 for more information about this event.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Out and About with Elaine. My name is Elaine LaRoche, and are you going out to the farmer's market? It starts in an hour, almost an hour, 9 to 1 p.m. I go there almost every single week. Last week, Emily was there selling beautiful wreaths and flowers, and I seen Heather there and Ed, and it's local. I mean, I seen people from work and family. Have you been yet, Jim?
No, not this season.
You no. haven't been?
No, and I work here in the morning, and by the time I get out at 1, I just want to go home and, you know, see the kids and do something else.
It is such a great idea, and the more, like, I talk to Heather, she has an eclectic group of people from, like, a knife sharpener. We have llamas there 1 week, you know, alpacas another. You've got fresh vegetables. Organic person is there now. They've got a girl that sells beautiful honey products. It's just amazing. And that kettle corn. Oh, don't even get me started on that. That is just, oh, unbelievable. So from coffee to wine and cheese and everything in between. And I'm really happy that we are here in the city of Attleboro, that we have this wonderful farmer's market. It's just really a fantastic time. So hopefully one day you might be able to just go out real quick and come back or something.
Right. I went a couple of times last year. It's just this year I haven't put the focus in.
That's okay. We do have a special event, though. The Friends of Attleboro Animal Shelter is having their 13th annual Harvest Fest today. From 10 a.m. to 3, it's a fun-filled family day. It's just really great time, so you want to check that out. They have a lot of different vendors there. You want to go. It is just a really great time. It's free. You know, go there. Support our local shelters. You know, everything is, you have to, well, they're raising money and awareness, and also to check out the new animals that could be yours for adoption. So I'm always wanting people to do that. And when I get my house, Jim, that's where I'm going. I'm going there. Now, last week we had the South Attleboro Lions had their wonderful event, Fall Fest. This week, Lions Fall Fest is in Plainville. So their Lions Club is having their annual Fall Festival today from noon to 5. And we're asking everybody to come on down to support them, too. And they have local crafters and food, lots of games. They even have pony and train rides. I don't know about train rides. How are you going to get a train in Plainville?
It's those little miniature
It's too early trains, in the morning. Yeah. I'm being sarcastic.
Okay, gotcha.
My brain is just starting to wake up. Anyway, so that's happening in our area, too. So there's a lot of different things. But also, too, tonight, I mean, if you, or even this afternoon, from 1 to 4 p.m. in Providence, they're having this Peace Fest in Rhode Island, and it's right in the downtown area. They have, I work in Providence, and they have a lot of signage there, so it's a festival to celebrate peace, and in our country with so much going on, it's just really great to take a break and a breather to just go down there. But one of my favorite events is Water Fire. It's a Chinese, there's two major ones that I go to every year, and one is tomorrow night, Chinese History and Culture Night, where they have local children perform. They do not only karate demonstrations, but there's music filling the whole water basin of the river in Providence. But they have the dancers in the I almost got stepped on last year with the dances with the dragon dancing. It's just beautiful. The costumes are just exquisite. They're really great. So they're going to be performing that. You know, when the I think it's at 6:38 is the sunset. So that's when they're going to start lighting the fires, and then the performances are throughout the whole night. It runs from 6:40 p.m. all the way up to, I think, about 11 o'clock. But if you get a chance to see something or you want to see something very unique, again, this is a family event. It's family-friendly. Check it out. It's tomorrow. It's one of the biggest ones. The next one that I'll have, and I will talk to people because there's a Gloria Gemma one over Columbus Day weekend. And I don't know, do you remember, I did a live remote for like 5 hours mm-hmm. down there.
Okay. And everything's all in pink.
Everything's all in pink. And, yeah. in pink. And it was just a camaraderie, I can't say enough about, especially the survivors or children of, and I even interviewed a college student whose mother was a cancer survivor, and that was pretty powerful because when we, as talk show hosts, we always ask the organization what you do and how you do community outreach, but I had an opportunity with so many hours to actually get into their organization, and like from the CEO all the way down to cancer survivors. But then when we did a break, my last break, this kid came up and he said, "Can I be on your show?" And I said, "Who are you, please?" And he said, "Well, my mom had, you know, cancer." I said, "Yes, sit down, sit in this chair." And he was just so great, you know, because, you know, kids are stronger than we give them credit for. Mm-hmm. And this kid was just so phenomenal. It was like the best experience. If of all the radio shows that I've ever done, of all the people that I've interviewed, that Gloria Gemma 5-hour radiothon was like the most soul-fulfilling. Career-wise, it was a high, but also too, like, we had so many people around us, like, just that day. It was just to see so many thousands of people that were affected by cancer, mm-hmm. and the cure rates are more and more successful, they were saying, new technology. But this organization, from start, if you're diagnosed, they you have a family, you have sisters, they call them, around you, from treatments and everything that you have to go through. And they offer free wig services, and there's counseling. This organization is so impacted. And I actually met Gloria Gemma. Nice. I was going to rent an apartment from them. True story, I did. And I walked in, and she was just really great. They had nothing available. And I lived up in Manville for like 9 years. But then she slowly progressed, and I lost track. And then years later, and boom, here I am. And, you know, fate, you know, and the daughter, one of their youngest daughters is named Gloria. And so it's all about prevention and everything. And it was just really a great interview. So that's coming up in October. And the State House is lit up with, like, hope, you know, courage, and other inspiring words. Mm. And it's just phenomenal. And I'll talk more about that. You can bet your life I will have people on from that interview. Maybe we can do it another time. I'll talk to you about that.
Sure.
But do you like Westerns at all, Jim, or no?
No, not at all. Westerns and sci-fi are just two genres I've never been able to get into.
Really?
Really.
Oh, my God, because The Magnificent Seven is playing. It started last night, Friday, and it's going. It just started, and I'm looking at Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke and a whole bunch of, and the other five stars I don't know, but it just looks like one of the movies that I'd be fascinated by. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I'm going to go see it. And my sister went to see Sully with Tom Hanks. I was wondering if you had seen that.
No, I've seen the trailers. I watch a lot of kids movies right now. So
yes, you do. Yes, I digress, of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's another good movie. She said that it was just really well done. Mm-hmm. And Tom Hanks, you just forget that he's even Tom Hanks. He did such a phenomenal job. Really, really inspiring. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, Mr. Church with Eddie Murphy. I can't see it.
Never heard of it.
Me either. It's a new movie that just came out. And he was interviewed, and the director of this film sent him the script, and he called him and he said, are you sure you got the right Eddie? He said, because this is a serious role. I'm a comedian, right. You know? And they said, no, we think that you'd be great. You know, we're going to, it's a dramatic part. It's a really moving movie. Mm. And so I thought, oh my God. So I know it's not Oscar worthy, but, and that's what he said. Mm-hmm. I'm quoting him. It's not Oscar worthy, but he said that he had a really good time. He never thought that he would be a serious actor.
Right.
And with good direction and everything, it was like, it was unbelievable. Mm. So an animated that just came out is Stork.
Okay.
So the I Storks, call it, yes. Yeah, the Storks movie. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that you'll be seeing that one with your children. I call it, it's a Facts of Life Disney movie, you know, and where babies suddenly appear and there's no questions answered. You don't have to answer any questions. So that's coming out as well. And a fun comedy is War Dogs. And I looked at that and I'm going, what? What is this? You know, but it's these goofy guys end up with a $300 million weapons contract. And what they do is they take the money and they're living the high life and everything. But it's when it's time to deliver the goods, they don't have it. And so, you know, everybody's coming after them, I guess, and it's a hide-and-seek kind of a comedy. And Jonah Hill is playing on that, and he is just hysterical. The antics and situations that they get into is worth the price of admission, I think. So those are some of the things, or highlights of movies that I'm going to see if I can go to.
We're still trying to get to see The Secret Life of Pets.
Oh, yes. I heard
it's still playing in the theaters. But,
yes, it is.
You know, it might not be for too long. But we threaten each weekend to go, and then it's either raining or we've got other stuff that is going on, and we don't make it.
Oh.
We did see the BFG, though, about a month or two ago, and it was good. A lot of holes in the story, but it was okay.
Did you see, was it Finding Dory?
Not yet.
No. I hear that's really cute, too. Mm-hmm. That's a cute movie, too. Yeah. There's a lot of great things. I'm so glad that Disney and others are turning towards animation for children and families. It's getting back to that old time where we used to go to the movies and enjoy, you know, movies. And these shoot 'em up movies and these sci-fi, like you say, and horror films. Yeah. I can't do a horror film.
No.
Oh, no. Oh, God, no. No, my sister tormented me too much, and I still sleep with a nightlight, and I won't tell you my age, but I'm still sleeping with a nightlight, so it's pretty bad. But anyway, folks, I hope, like, whatever you do, wherever you go, I hope that you have a chance to get out and about. Those are some of the things that are happening in our area. I'd like to thank Eric Creamer for coming on and talking to us about, you know, a very important subject, drunk driving, and also our good buddy and jazz musician, Greg Abate, for waking up with us as well. And I'd like to thank you all too for listening and getting up with us as well. So I'd like to thank Jim Jones, who's been kind enough to get up early, and he'll be getting his second cup of coffee too, I'm sure. And also I'd like to you know, I want to remind you that we are here, we are local radio, we are 6 days of live on WARA back again. Dominic will be back on Monday from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., followed by Paul Healy from 9 to noon. Our show, Out and About with Elaine, will be on next Saturday from 7 a.m. to 8, followed by Dave Kane from 9 to noon. I really sincerely thank you for listening to WARA 1320. It means a lot to us. We work really hard to provide you with community service, community events, and also too, it's important to find out what's happening in our area. So I am out and about. I hope that you will be too, and please check out Attleboro's Farmers Market from 9 a.m. to noon. Say hi to Heather and Ed, because they do work very, very hard. And meet me back here next Saturday at 7 a.m. for Out and About with Elaine. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.